It's the ERP Confab. I'm David Essex, Editor-at-Large of Search ERP, with my colleague Brian McKenna, Business Applications Editor at Computer Weekly. Artificial intelligence and robotic process automation are beginning to take over some tasks from ERP users. But just how intelligent is AI? How does it relate to RPA? And which technology is best for a given business process? We'll ask our guest, Bob DeCoe, Vice President of AI and RPA at the ERP vendor IFS.
Bob, thanks very much for joining us. I thought we might start with some definitions of terms. I'm wondering what you would say makes software intelligent as opposed to being something that's almost mechanical or just sort of basically rules-based.
It's always what comes down to the definition of intelligent. But if we think of, you know, hard-coded rules, they're set in stone, they don't change, they don't adapt. So I think that's a big part of what intelligence is, you know, the ability to adapt and learn and to find, you know, deep, complex patterns in data maybe itself without them needing to be hard-coded. I think how you represent that knowledge is also a measure of intelligence, you know, rather than just the if-then rules. As you said, it could be more complex hierarchies, it could be relationships with different strengths, you know, similarly to how the brain works. But, you know, moving towards what a proper intelligent, you know, artificial general intelligence would be, where you can take all that knowledge and apply it to general problems, do proper planning and strategizing, I don't think we're at that stage with software yet. So I think, you know, learning, absolutely, representing knowledge, yes, but not, you know, fully towards solving all different types of problems. Still needs guidance.
I mean, there's a lot of talk about AI in a range of sectors, but maybe more importantly, healthcare, especially in view of the pandemic that we've been living through and so on. A lot of talk and some of the AI that I've come across in the NHS is AI, whether it's computer imaging or whatever, but a lot of it is conventional data analytics. I've even seen it explicated as really just being IT, effectively. And do you think it's helpful to have allowed the term to have kind of overinflated to cover all sorts of things?
Do I think it's helpful? I think no, because I think it's raised expectations of what AI can deliver and certainly what it can deliver without, you know, a good amount of work to set it up. You know, I always say that AI is not just something you can overlay onto what you're doing to suddenly get a lot of benefits. You need to do a lot of that setup. And as you say, Brian, getting the data in the right form, having knowledge of your domain, your industry, what that data actually means, I don't think that's going to go away. You know, even the best AI, your deep learning type models, they can find incredible patterns in an image, for example. If they look at a face, it could find, you know, very important features that would distinguish one face from another. And it might not be things that humans would understand. You know, we think in terms of things like, you know, the distance between the eyes or the distance from the eye to the nose. As soon as you let a deep learning model come up with its own features, you're effectively losing some of that visibility. That can get you some great results. But if you need to audit those processes or, you know, understand what's going on as you do in healthcare and other industries, I think it can become very dangerous. So, you know, that whole sort of data processing setup, all those IT type processes, that's a key underlying driver for how we're going to get the use of AI anyway. So it's not helpful to band all together, absolutely not.
There definitely are some things going on. I remember talking to a CEO of a small company called Ultromics, who are doing work in the NHS and also in healthcare in the US as well. And that's about making echocardiograms more accurate, or making the intelligence that you derive from ECG visualizations more accurate, which is very important when it comes to, you know, diagnosing people with heart conditions and so on. You've got a very deep background, Bob, in financial services. Do you think that's the sector that's most ahead when it comes to AI?
I think it's one that certainly had a head start. You know, they are fortunate enough in financial services to have a lot of data, certainly. Yeah. And, you know, there's an awful lot riding on being able to get a competitive edge. And there's a natural home to AI and algorithms in terms of trading and trying to make optimal decisions. So yeah, I think they've been... they've been doing it in that context for a while. But I think we're seeing a lot of other industries catching up now, certainly in terms of their data volumes, manufacturing, the service industries, anything with heavy assets that can produce, you know, streams of data from IoT. They've all got great opportunities now to take advantage of that same data in the same way financial services has been leading the way. So I think financial services is always quite insular looking in terms of how it uses AI, and we'll see some more sort of societal and perhaps more interesting uses in other industries.
Of course, you're working for IFS now. I mean, if we think about what we could call the ERP industry, and we use this on this podcast as a kind of shorthand for business applications more generally, I mean, do you think people in your industry on the supplier side should perhaps really push back on the term AI and use machine learning really as the term for what's actually happening in the real world? I mean, you talked about IoT applications there and so on.
I think a lot of the difficulty with what we've seen over the last few years is a blending of these terms. And so, you know, it's very hard for some business specialists to really understand the difference. I mean, you say to use machine learning instead of AI, you know, I would say machine learning is a subset of AI, right? It's learning from data.
Yeah.
There's other forms of AI. There's natural language processing. So the ability to, you know, semantically parse language and represent knowledge, image processing, those sorts of areas are using machine learning as well. And then there's other fields such as evolutionary computing, taking techniques from nature, which are very different things we use. But you know, would I expect the end user of ERP software to understand those differences? No, absolutely not. And I think, you know, it's very important with how these technologies are delivered to the end users in a way that's embedded so that they don't have to have that deep understanding of what's going on, but it provides them the ability to draw these different elements together, IoT, as you say, machine learning, sort of standard workflows so they can do their processes more effectively. So I'm very much an advocate of trying to remove as much of the complexity as possible for the end users. So I wouldn't say they need to push back on the term, but I'd like it in ERP that is less of a focus on the technology and more what the sort of end goal of that technology is. What processes does it actually help?
Yeah, I had a conversation recently with Steve Miranda at Oracle, and I was asking him about the business value of AI, and he was very quick to go to machine learning as the preferred term for things like, you know, new digital interfaces in terms of voice and IoT applications and new functions and so on. He very quickly restated it as machine learning.
I think, you know, most of the examples we've seen of AI in isolation within ERP and enterprise software is going to be machine learning driven. But I'd say, you know, the whole class of optimization problems, for example, which is, you know, something we've got a strong background in, is also AI, really. And I wouldn't say that's machine learning at all. You know, that's combining mathematical techniques, trying to find a best possible solution amongst thousands, millions or billions of possibilities using, you know, some metrics to drive you towards the right approach. That's quite different from machine learning. And I wouldn't really lump natural language processing quite into that same bracket as well. You know, so I think machine learning is naturally where you're going to keep coming back to that as the one that's picked up the most traction, because it's very data dependent and ERPs are always going to generate a lot of data.
Given all that, what does AI mean? What does it mean if it mostly means machine learning?
Well, and that's a good question. I think it's still useful as an umbrella term for that set of technologies that absolutely includes machine learning, natural language processing, and evolutionary computing. I think, you know, they're the three that I would put in there. But I would think of what AI delivers is, you know, effectively a way of getting value from your data using advanced algorithms. But do you need to understand exactly how that's working as an end user? Absolutely not. I think there's been a big push to develop data science and data scientists over the past few years, which is great, you know, for building the applications and the ways of taking advantage of these technology. But a lot of it is becoming commoditized now to the point where, you know, certainly for us as an ERP vendor, we don't need to reinvent the wheel. You know, we don't need to build our own language processing model. There's things we can take advantage of. For us, it's very much about how we deliver AI, this technology, to the users so that they can get some business benefit, and how we can provide them a framework effectively that can take advantage of, you know, ethical principles, auditability, so they can understand the data and allow them to build up, you know, trust in the system. You know, I think that's the role I see for the ERP vendor when it comes to AI.
In the real world, I mean, what sort of business problems or indeed technical problems are driving companies to reach for what we can call AI in the first place? I mean, beyond a kind of, I don't know, a sort of business hype about appealing to CEOs.
I think the sheer volume of data available to companies these days is a big driver. You know, there's a fear in terms of how do I take advantage of this? You know, both data companies are collecting themselves, maybe from their processes, from the machines in the field. Also data they can get, you know, from third parties now. You know, it's a question of, you know, how can I make better decisions than I was doing before to potentially drive my costs down? So how can I make my processes more efficient, for example? Can I automate things so that I don't need as many people doing, you know, lower value work so that they can focus on, you know, higher value decisions? Or can I make people's lives easier by giving them more pertinent information to make a decision? One of the big benefits of AI, and we'll come to explainable AI later, but whatever result you get out of it isn't the end, right? You know, it's just effectively a number, a probability. You still need to do something with that. You need to present it in a context that someone can use. So I think a lot of companies are trying to think in terms of how I can make better decision making. The other big angle is they see a lot of competitors with new approaches, maybe digital first. Are there new revenue streams they could take advantage of by extending the product lifecycle? So, for example, rather than just delivering a product and then maintaining and servicing that product on some sort of calendar periodic basis, if we're talking about an asset, could they look towards some more outcome-based method where they could look to deliver certain service level agreement metrics, you know, performance uptime, things like that, where they can take advantage of machine learning to deliver that to their customers. And that can potentially give them new revenue streams that they wouldn't have been able to get before. So I think AI can help with the top line as well, new revenue streams, rather than just reducing costs, which is probably the more, you know, standard way that's thought about.
So it's one thing to talk about what people are hoping to get out of AI, and then there's what it's actually good at. What are the types of problems and business processes that it's best applied to?
Again, we come back to, you know, when we're saying AI, do we mean machine learning there, right? So we'll talk about machine learning first. I think anything where you've got a lot of data and you've got some desired outcome that you can measure against, you know, so, you know, be that the performance of an asset or how many invoices you categorize correctly. If you've got some output that you can clearly measure and you've got lots of historical examples of that, that's what machine learning is good at. You know, finding deep patterns that will drive you towards a good or a bad outcome, and so be able to, you know, do a lot of that work for you. I'd say if we think of other areas of AI, such as the optimization, I think any problems where you're looking to get towards the best solution with, you know, a number of, if we think in the field, right, you have a number of technicians, say, you know, have a number of jobs they need to do. They have certain skills and constraints they have to meet, and they have certain locations to go to. A problem like that is a classic for optimization, but when it's done at scale, you know, a standard maths algorithm is probably not going to work, and it's certainly not going to be able to adapt to changing situations that you see throughout a day, you know, people becoming ill, new jobs coming in, etc. So that sort of dynamic nature is where, you know, AI driven optimization can work. I think optimization, those sorts of problems, machine learning, data driven with an earned outcome.
So if we think about TLAs that make up the business applications space, ERP, CRM, HCM, I mean, how does AI fit into those? I'll say this by way of a kind of interpolation. So one approach has been to kind of name your AI. I think that's maybe gone out of fashion a bit, but we had it with SAP Leonardo. We had it with help me out here, David, with
Coleman at Infor. Coleman
for Infor.
Salesforce with Einstein, and so on. So there's been that kind of approach of kind of naming it as a thing. How do you see it? How does it fit into those mainstream business applications that, you know, boards sign off immense amounts of money on investing in these things?
When you're naming your AI platform, and, you know, we'll talk a little bit about that approach later, you're looking to a sort of general purpose solution, right? You have a platform that's specifically used for AI, and then you have to find ways to actually use that. And you might need to put the onus on the end user to do that, to find their own use cases, their problems. I think how I see things going, certainly our approach, is to embed the AI. So an end user doesn't really need to know it's there, but it's fulfilling some role under the hood. So a lot of the classic examples you see in ERP, in the finance space, you know, things like automated invoice approval, managing like the procure to pay type processes. But I think, you know, there's lots of other examples in the areas you mentioned. In HCM, there's a lot of performance management type stuff. But there you're really fraught with danger in terms of the data that's going in and the types of decisions you're making. And I think this comes back to the idea that when you're delivering solutions in ERP, you need to kind of keep the customers on rails a little bit and sort of guide them with what they're doing. If you were to let people make their own data-driven solutions in HCM, for example, around performance, you've got all sorts of questions around the data quality and potential data biases that you may not need, you know, so that you may need to audit. If you can deliver that, you know, through your ERP system, you understand the data very well, it's well structured, you can deliver an answer to the customer that you can explain why a decision's been made, and this is the importance of explainable AI, then you can start building those trust and not have those nasty surprises down the line. So the sort of problems, potential solutions you see in the HCM space. But I think it's, you know, certainly for us with our, you know, one platform approach with IFS Cloud and weaving in EAM and, you know, field service into the traditional ERP story.
Yeah.
It's a question of how you can bring all that data together to start making better decisions, you know, on an end-to-end basis. So rather than just finding an individual problem to solve with machine learning, such as automated invoice approval, for example, you might look at something like the maintenance of an asset, predictive maintenance, and that could combine all sorts of different elements, some of which are traditional ERP, some aren't. It could be IoT data from the asset itself, how the asset looks now, but it could be more traditional data such as the service history, the parts that have been had in the past, you know, how often that asset has broken down. You can weave that in with what the asset looks like now and start making better decisions. And then you can potentially feed that into, you know, creating intelligent work orders for technicians to go and fix it. So rather than just passing a job to the technician, you could intelligently query your service histories, maybe technicians' notes from the past or manuals about the asset, and actually give the technician more contextual information to allow them to do their job more effectively. So I think it's really a combination of traditional ERP type data with elements in the field and sort of, you know, for the assets themselves, that I see a lot of the more interesting cases.
I suppose the rationale for the naming thing, which we can have a lot of fun with, was to kind of suggest and really underscore that a layer of intelligence was being added. I mean, that's really what was being said, I think. That was, you know, the kind of the rationale for that. Bob, your job title extends to RPA, Robotic Process Automation. You said about, you know, machine learning being a subset of AI. Is RPA a subset of AI, or is it a more traditional tech?
RPA is a difficult one because it undoubtedly features a lot of AI in the work that it does. But I think the AI is necessary because it's trying to solve a traditional problem in a traditional way. It's effectively trying to replicate how a human interacts with a system, you know, in terms of the clicks they're making and the processes they're following, but by trying to follow that through a GUI, you know, effectively. And so by taking that approach of trying to replicate a human, you have to solve a lot of very complex problems that do use AI. You know, you need almost a computer vision. You need to understand what buttons on a screen look like. You need to be able to handle uncertainty of whether a user meant to be pressing A or B. So there's lots of uses for AI within RPA, but is it solving a problem that artificial intelligence should really be applied to? Not really for me. I mean, it's really trying to solve, it's trying to automate a workflow. And you can do that using now, in my opinion, often more effectively, sort of system integration tools, right? You know, just being able to make sure that systems can talk to each other via API so that they can communicate, they can pass data more effectively. RPA is a good way of sitting over the top, as I say, you know, replicating what a human does. It's quick and easy to set up. I'm not sure it scales that well and is particularly, you know, robust, because if the process changes, or even if, you know, I think a big one, what if a human wasn't doing something in the best possible way? You know, what if you're replicating an inefficient system anyway? That's not a particularly good approach. And it would actually make more sense to just try and automate that workflow and perhaps apply some machine learning or reinforcement learning to that process against some metrics. Is this the best way of doing it? Could I have done it in fewer clicks? Could I have done it in a more effective way so that, you know, my customer is waiting less time on the phone? So I think RPA, if we break that down, process automation is key. And we do a lot of that within ERP software. You know, we're always looking to automate processes. And you said it's in my job title. It absolutely is. But I think it's evolving more towards automation and process automation than RPA. RPA is very much about how different systems talk to each other. And for us as an ERP vendor, we absolutely need to make sure that we make it as easy as possible for other systems to talk to us, to get data in, to be able to communicate, to perhaps, you know, bundle up our APIs so that it's clear how someone could, you know, send an invoice in or import some data from a particular program. But the extent of us dealing with RPA doesn't really stretch outside the boundaries of the ERP. So process automation within our ERP, absolutely, but I wouldn't call it RPA particularly. So yeah, I come across as a little bit of a skeptic on this. I think it's a good way for people to get up and running with automating processes, but I don't think it's the way of doing it at scale.
Bob, you've talked about in the past and you've written about the importance of explainable AI and the idea of showing users what the decision drivers were behind some of the answers they're getting back from their AI tool. I'm wondering, what is IFS doing to promote the idea or to actually, you know, execute explainable AI? What do you have now? What's coming next?
The work we're doing at the moment around predictive maintenance does a lot of work with time series data, you know, data coming from assets, from machines in real time. And you're trying to effectively predict whether something's going to break down at some time window in the future. Usually that's all very well. You can assign a probability to something like that. But in the real world, most companies are not just interested in whether something's going to break down. They want to know which part is going to break down, you know, where they can actually go to isolate a problem. So certainly in the work we're doing in that field with airlines, particularly with Icelandair, we're looking on trying to predict aircraft on ground events, AOG events, where there's unplanned downtime for that aircraft, and trying to pinpoint a particular part of an aircraft that's likely to fail. So this is kind of the explainability of the features, the output, if you like, in terms of not just giving back a probability, but trying to pinpoint it to where that problem would lie. We're starting to take advantage of technologies that are more available open source now for interpreting more complex models. These are techniques such as LIME and SHAP. It's a very fast moving market. Effectively, they can take a black box model, look at its behavior, and understand what the features are driving it, both at an overall level and for any specific prediction. So that's something we're bringing into all the machine learning services we're offering. And we also have some bespoke tech around how we evolve rules-based systems. So if you go back to the very start, a lot of ERP processes have those hard-coded rules. As soon as you start allowing those rules to change and evolve over time, as new data comes in, you can start modeling those relationships. Some of those rules will become more important to others. You're adding machine learning into that typical system, but you're also maintaining something that's quite visible and intuitive. You know, the nice thing about if then else type rules is they're easy to understand. So if you can frame a prediction in terms of those types of rules, that's great for auditability. It's great for building up trust in why a prediction's being made. And that's some bespoke technology that we're building into our machine learning model.
Whenever we, Brian and I, attend these conferences and we talk to ERP developers, we're always, I think, curious about what's really involved in adding machine learning, any kind of AI, to your daily workflow. And so, like, how much of this requires a lot of work from a system integrator or maybe from the consulting part of IFS, and how much of this can they do themselves?
The key with our approach is we want to start use case first. So it's always driven by an end service that the customer is taking advantage of. For example, say in CRM, it's, you know, lead prediction, right? You have a new lead come in. What's the probability of that lead converting? You know, how much effort should you put into that? The idea is that you have those specific use cases and all the pipes that would drive the prediction to be made are all in place. So if you buy the lead prediction service, you have the data pipelines in place so that new lead data would feed into that. That would feed into the machine learning service that would automatically train and update and monitor and model on an ongoing basis. So that you as an end user, you're not having to interact with the machine learning at all. We're trying to automate that data science pipeline so that you concentrate on where you're a specialist, you know, in your domain knowledge, your understanding of the data. So to that end, it reduces the sort of consultancy need to set these things up by focusing on specific use cases. It reduces your flexibility of something like a full machine learning as a platform type service, you know, which we've discussed. Some other competitors have certainly gone that route in the past, but that's where you really are taking, you know, a long time, 4 to 8 weeks to even prototype solutions. They're very open-ended. Even then, how do you pass that on to the customer so they can maintain that going forward? I think by focusing on specific use cases and keeping our hand on the tiller, so we take customers through the pathway, we control the data that goes in, we control the models that come out, it's much less effort for them to get up and running. It's much more embedded. So that's the process we take when we are applying machine learning to try and reduce that consultancy burden, as you say.
My impression from the different ERP vendors, some of your competitors, is that Oracle has done a pretty good job of talking about specific processes and talking about adaptive intelligent apps that do a certain kind of invoicing and that kind of thing. Maybe I haven't paid enough attention to Infor lately, but they were doing the platform route, it seemed, with Coleman. SAP, I think, has had a bit of a mixed story, kind of a big picture sort of intelligent enterprise story, but then also a co-pilot for their RPA and all sorts of different approaches. So how would you say IFS, its approach differs from either some of those specific major competitors or just in general from the rest of the ERP industry?
As I said, the aim for us is really not to provide the end technology as a platform in the same way that, you know, Infor, Leonardo did, you know, and I think that's changing now where they focus more on the use cases. The difference for us is with IFS Cloud, it's really one product. So that makes it a lot easier to synthesize data together, you know, across the different traditional facets of ERP, the project management, or the logistics side of things, the manufacturing, the asset planning, with some of the, you know, the IoT elements for assets, the field service. We're focusing more on, you know, end-to-end processes. So not necessarily just individual points where machine learning could apply, you know, in helping you to approve an invoice, say, but how does that help you with an overall flow in terms of something like intelligent asset monitoring? So understanding when an asset's going to break down, then being able to raise a work order off the back of that, feed suitable information and knowledge through to whoever's going to fix it, and then optimize all your technicians so that they can fix that in the optimal way across the country. Now, that's a big workflow there. And it's those workflows, I guess, that we're more interested in than just solving those individual problems. I think that's what differentiates us, really, is we've got much more of a holistic data model with that one product view that allows us to hopefully drive value across those broad workflows.
So what are we going to see next from IFS in this area, to the degree that you can tell us?
I think a big area that we've had for a long time is in the field of optimization, as I mentioned. And that was taking advantage of AI, but in a different way to sort of traditional machine learning. It was working on a sort of more, call it sort of a meta learning type basis. So if I've got a problem, what's the best approach to solving that problem that I should take? And can I do that automatically rather than a user having to try lots of different methods, lots of different algorithms? Can I choose for them based on the type of the data or, you know, what we understand about the domain, you know, having seen these problems before? We've done that in the optimization space in field service for a long time. You know, a big element of what we're doing is bringing that technology and that sort of meta learning, if you like, into other areas, particularly, you know, manufacturing, production planning, logistics. These are all key areas where that optimization technology is really helpful. And also using that meta learning in a sort of machine learning type context for elements like demand forecasting. They're traditionally done using quite statistical methods within IFS, which is fine. But if you're starting to bring in lots more data sources to understand, you know, the demand for a particular product based on the time of year, the weather, sort of third party aspects, even, you know, where they're going to go in the store, promotions, those typical statistical approaches aren't going to necessarily work anymore. And that's where machine learning can really help. So we're putting a lot of focus into developing that sort of short-term planning using machine learning. So there are a couple of the broad areas we're looking at, but it's a case of trying to weave these technologies into the different ERP areas, as you say.
Mm-hmm. I suppose a final question for me, you refer to the kind of top line and bottom line benefits.
Yeah.
What's the best one to go for? I mean, if you're kind of trying to sell this concept to a customer, you know, what are the pluses and minuses of going top line or bottom line?
I think it will be industry dependent to some aspect, because I think to go top line, even bottom line, to some extent, certainly to go top line, you're going to need good data for decision making. But, you know, top line would be the way to go if you can fundamentally, you know, change your business model or come up with a new revenue stream based, for example, as I mentioned, on, you know, on outcomes. So effectively extending what you do with a product from just selling it into then, you know, managing that product, you give yourself a lot more opportunities to make money off it. That's going to be of a huge amount of benefit. I think, you know, most companies like to think in terms of, you know, increasing their revenue rather than just reducing the costs. There's going to be a lot of low hanging fruit on the bottom line to make processes more efficient. Without a doubt. But I think, you know, the top line is going to be where the bigger benefits are realized.
Thanks, both of you, for your time today.
Awesome. Thank you very much.